But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Tom. It's May, but I feel like it's deep winter in the studio this morning.
Well, it finally got, you know, warmer out. You know, I guess it was yesterday. It's been winter in May and spring in February here, all backwards. But anyway, what's doing?
Same old, same old. Yeah. I keep hearing a lot about you. You're all over the place with these book signings.
Yeah, it's been kind of a busy book signing schedule. I have one coming up at Inseme, you know, the winery over in Oceanside.
I know it well. It's across the street from my mom's house.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I was going to drop in to see her yesterday, but it took longer than I thought. You know, we had a little tasting yesterday.
Oh, that's right. I saw Massimo.
Massimo, yeah.
I was there right before you were going.
Oh, yeah.
And he said you were bringing somebody in to do some sort of tasting.
Yeah, Mike Douglas, who used to own Post Liquors, was going in to do a tasting also. I think he's promoting some of his wines. And I got to tell you know, I tasted through the whole portfolio. I always thought it just had Merlot Cab, you know, a Sauvignon Blanc and a Chard. And I got to say, it's a Long Island winery, but it's all California grapes, which is kind of unusual, you know. And normally I'd have an eyebrow up about that. But the bottom line is, if you're going to buy California wine, why not buy it from a guy from Long Island if you can, and, you know, support the homies a little bit, you know. But his wines are good. He's a talented guy, I got to tell you. You know, I tasted through the whole portfolio.
No, it's all good stuff, and he's very adventurous. I assume you worked out all the details of next week, because he wasn't sure if you were doing a cooking demo or how it'll work.
May 20th, if anybody's interested, I'm doing a cooking demo / book signing.
What time?
From 1 to 4, Saturday the 20th, and I think tickets are $50. You get a book, you get a tasting, and you get a glass of wine. So, and, you know, I'll do my usual stand-up comedy routine for an hour or two, you know. So it's a fun time. You know, we've been doing those all over Long Island. They've been sold out pretty much. And
one of the first one in Nassau County, though.
It is. Yeah, we did one on the border there. I did one in Northport. It was a Twisted Cow Distillery, which is, I tell you what, some of the booze he's making over there. I'm not really a spirits guy, but I tasted a couple of things he was doing really good. The whiskeys, and he's got a nice rum, too, if you like sugar. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like I said, we sold out at Twisted Cow, so hopefully the same thing will happen in Semi.
It's funny you're talking about the spirits. I actually was in Florida last weekend. Last weekend was a crazy week. Flew into West Palm, went to see Morgan Wallen, who's a country artist. Up here, he was supposed to play two nights at MetLife. So football field arenas. Down there, it was like a Jones Beach Theater, amphitheater type thing. So we got to see him perform. Then he ended up hurting his voice and postponed the rest of his tour, so we were pretty lucky. Went to a Kentucky Derby party the next night up in Jupiter.
Did you have a hat on?
I did. No, I didn't have a hat, but I had this really crazy blazer.
Oh, okay.
So I dressed the part, but there is a theme here. The house that hosted the party, the guy had a probably 20 by 20 library, smoking room, but it was a bourbon room.
Really?
And he had from floor to ceiling shelving with like that library type ladder you can get to the upper stuff. But he must have had 100 different bourbons. Everybody brings a bourbon to him, and anything from, you know, Whistle Pig that's high end and all these small batch bourbons or whatever. But it was just crazy. I never saw anything like it.
Well, you don't have too much money. That's the problem. If you have too much money, you open up a bourbon room. You
know? Absolutely.
You run out of things to buy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great.
But it was a good time. And then we actually, we drove from West Palm up to University of South Carolina to pick up Carrie's daughter. And Bill O'Leary had been on the texting me back and forth all weekend. Where are you?
Was he down there also?
He was there the week before, and he introduced the manager of Ruth's Chris to Playing with Fire.
Oh, really?
So now we have a listener down in South Carolina.
Starts with one, right?
But we drove from West Palm to South Carolina one day. The next day we drove from South Carolina back up to New York, which was crazy, 14 hours.
No thanks.
But
that's why God made airplanes.
Yes. Well, we had to bring a car up, so it was that's what we had to do.
All right, so you had a busy week when you abandoned me last week. There.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I couldn't fit you into my schedule.
I know. I can't take it. Anyway, listen, we have a couple of guests that we're going to bring. We're going to take a little break, but there's this new restaurant open up. It's exciting in Rockville Center called Rosu, and we have the chef, Lee Hernandez, and his partner, Kevin.
We have Kevin and Lee, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to bring them in. And don't tell anybody, but if you go there, just tell them Tom sent you, and he'll give you like 2 free meals or something, you know. But don't let them know until they get back in here, right?
Okay.
So let's take a break, and we'll pay some bills, and we'll come back, and we'll talk to Lee and Kevin.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remained open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Play With Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Okay, so we're here. We're going to talk about Rosu, this new Rockville Center restaurant, Japanese restaurant. And we got Kevin Hushangi and Lee Hernandez. Lee's the chef. Kevin's the owner. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Tom?
Good. I'm well. How about you guys?
Good.
Thanks for coming in, you know. So, Rosu, Rockville Center, how did it all happen, Kevin? How did it start?
We saw an opportunity to take advantage of a phenomenon that was happening. During the pandemic, so many people from New York City were going out in Rockville Center. They were going there to eat. They were going there to drink. The restrictions in the city sort of didn't give them options in the boroughs. And just to hop over to Rockville Center, it was slightly more lax. And we saw an opportunity to take a beautiful piece of real estate and bring this omakase izakaya type experience that was prevalent in New York City, prevalent in Miami, and for years in California, and bring it to the village and give the people there an opportunity to have it in a very similar way to how it's done in the city.
Cool. You know, it's funny how I've been noticing over the last 50 years or so how, you know, food things tend to start in California, Los Angeles, you know, the whole Wolfgang Puck thing, Spago in the 80s, you know. Then it goes to New York, right? And then you would think it would come to Long Island, but it goes to the Hamptons first. It jumps to the Hamptons, then goes to Miami, then finally gets on Long Island about 7 years after the fact, you know?
Well, you know, the Hamptons are the sixth borough, right?
Yeah, totally, totally.
It's not really part of Long Island.
I lived there for a long time. I know. So it's a fun concept from what I've read, and maybe you could explain a little bit. Maybe Lee can explain a little bit. Lee's the chef.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, explain a little bit about the food and, you know, what your thoughts on that are.
Well, when I was first brought up for this project, you know, Kevin and our partner, Max, really wanted to bring something that was missing in Rockville Center, which was, you know, the omakase, you know, like experience that you get.
You know, just in case, and, you know, some listeners aren't familiar with it, explain what omakase is.
Well, omakase is, you know, word for word translates to leave it to the chef. I leave it up to you.
Right.
Just means, you know, you come in, you enjoy what the chef has prepared for you for that day. You know, it might be, tomorrow might be different than it is today. It's just really about getting the freshest ingredients and putting them in front of you for you to enjoy.
In a tasting menu format.
Yeah, just a tasting menu.
Cool.
Just, you know, just a few bites of sushi.
Yeah, yeah.
We do about 20, but it's fine.
Yeah.
You live full.
Yeah, yeah. Small.
Small. Well, it's, you know, it's about bringing diversity and options to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we really wanted to bring that to the island, you know, to Rockville Center. I mean, I worked in the city for 10 years.
Well, talk about your background a little bit. How'd you start?
I started in Miami. Kind of walked into a restaurant, was looking for a server position. They didn't have availability for that. It was a Japanese restaurant. And they were like, well, we need a sushi chef. I was like, I grew up in a Hispanic household.
Right.
I didn't know what sushi was until I was 19 when I got hired to do that.
Yeah.
Which is funny, but I mean, I ended up loving it. You know, clearly, you know, 11 years later, I'm still doing it.
So yeah, sure.
It's kind of like how it just happened. Uh-huh. Like, they needed hands. I was looking for a job, so. Well, you know, the rest is history, pretty much.
So the guy trained you when you were there?
Sushi chef.
They give you that one eyebrow 19. Up kind of thing, you know, Spanish
No, I mean, the worst part is, like, I first started, not the worst part, but they were like, they always pick on the new guy, you know?
Oh, sure, yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, for wasabi, mix the horseradish with hot water. If you don't know, it makes it worse. Yeah. You can't breathe. Yeah. It's like, it's so bad. And they were like, that's what they told me to do. I was just like, I hate you guys.
You know, it's funny. I came up under the old French guard in the city when I was a kid. I was watching this guy make shrimp bisque, you know, which to me was, oh, my God, shrimp bisque, you know. So I went over to him, and I was watching him. His name was Andre, you know. He says, he said, American, you want to learn how to make the bisque? I said, yeah. He says, then go buy a book. Don't look over my shoulder. You know? They were always so lousy to you, you know. So yeah. I was wondering if I'm assuming it was a Japanese sushi chef that you were?
No, Chinese.
Oh, Chinese?
Yeah.
Boy, that's unheard of.
Yeah, right? It's only a few.
But he was good to you? He taught you what was needed?
I mean, yes. I mean, the whole company, I worked with the company for 2 years. They really, you know, as an introduction for sushi, wasn't anywhere high-end or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, they have 20 restaurants in Miami, worked here in Zuma, worked for Debbie Boulay, his restaurant in Tribeca, Brushstroke.
Yeah, Brushstroke.
And
yeah,
Ichimura. You know, it's like amazing restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
You know, did some bouncing around also, like a Sushi Azabu in Tribeca as well.
Uh-huh. Is Brushstroke still there?
No, they raised the rent.
I used to eat a boulet all the time.
Oh, that's amazing.
Great stuff.
I mean, sad part about that, I love that, like, those three restaurants there.
Yeah.
They were, like, iconic and so amazing. But they're all shut down now.
Yeah.
Sad.
And they've probably retired to Connecticut somewhere.
I think Boulay already has a house in Connecticut.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he opened a new restaurant on 23rd or something.
Did he? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Boulay at Home, I believe it's called.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's nice.
He had that Austrian restaurant, too, for a while. It was around the block from Boulay. I can't think of the name of it now.
Yeah, I can't think of it either, but I know exactly what it is.
He used to go there and drink Gruner Veltliner until I couldn't see.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And not just the sugar bombs.
No. For sure.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. How long, I mean... To me, rice is the whole thing with sushi. I mean, anybody can cut fish. Literally. How long did it take you to get it down?
Well, you know, they usually say it takes about 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
I was working 18 hours a day for, you know, 2 years. So
cut the time down.
Yeah, you know, cut the time down to 2 years.
Good for you.
It's everybody thinks, you know, like sushi is just the fish.
Mm.
It's actually the third most important thing that you're getting into. You know, the soy sauce is the second. Rice is always the first. And, you know, then comes to fish, you know. If you look at it into, you know, perspective, it's like 80% of it's rice, you know. Then you have your fish.
Sure.
It's all about really the balance of the bite that you're having. It's very simple, which is why it's so hard to, like, master. You know, I don't consider myself a master by any means, you know. Yeah. Like, I have a long way to go still, but, you know, I work with very talented people that, you know, taught me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm very confident of what I know how to make.
Sure.
You know, our rice is imported from Japan. We get 3 vinegar blends.
Right.
I make my own blend, let it age for 2 weeks, and then we use it.
Right.
You know, cool. Same thing with my soy sauce. I make my own soy sauce blend.
Nice.
Fish we get from all over the world, you know, as Japan, Hawaii, the U.S., Canada, Spain. And just... all of that experience I've had in my last 10 years is just kind of bringing here to, like, Rozu.
What's great, what I find so interesting about sushi, and I find the same thing about some Tuscan food, too, is that simplicity is almost the hardest thing to do, you know, because there's nowhere to hide. You know what I mean?
No,
you
can't, that's it.
You can't mask it with anything, you know, so it's got to be, you know, it's got to be there. It's got to be great, you know, and I think that's very, very difficult. It's a discipline that takes a long time to figure out. You know, I remember as a young chef trying to reinvent the wheel, but, oh, I'm going to be this autistic guy, and after a while, you just kind of evolve back into that whole... you know, the Greek fish thing, you know, a little olive oil, some lemon and oregano, off you go, you know?
You can't
and
go
sometimes
wrong with
that. It can be, yeah, it's perfect food at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And sushi is very much like that.
It lets the ingredients speak for themselves.
Yeah, yeah, you know? For sure.
It's just the best part about it.
And, you know, I always we always talk about this when, you know, when we're talking about sushi on the air, is that, I'll sit at a sushi bar and I'll watch people, you know, put a half a cup of, you know, soy sauce in a thing and then the whole wasabi and they make a soup kind of thing and they douse the rice. And I'm like, I can see the sushi chef with the eye roll going, oh, geez, you know, could you not, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you want a soy sauce tasting, you know.
If you go to someone's home and you eat a salad, right, it's doused in dressing.
Yeah.
And when you order salad at a restaurant, sometimes someone will say, my wife does this all the time, she'll say, can I have the dressing on the side? And I say, the art of the salad is arranging it and dressing it.
Yes.
That's the art. That's the chef. That's what makes him different from us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and she'll say something like, yeah, but the calories, I want to be very careful with the calories on this and with rice, right? We all, whether you learn it in culinary school or your grandmother teaches you, you all learn to make rice in a very culturally distinct way.
Sure, yeah.
And it's the simplest thing, but the most difficult thing.
Yeah,
the same. It's not easy, right? Simple, but not easy.
Absolutely.
And that's the biggest journey for me personally is growing up eating at all you could eat sushi roll places to actually tasting what proper a proper interpretation of sushi rice should be,
mm-hmm.
and learning that the process so inherently Japanese in spending years learning to make rice.
Oh yeah, you know? It's crazy. Yeah. You know, I want to go back to what you said. You know, the one thing that all sauce on the side people have in common,
what is that?
They always ask for more.
Yeah.
It's like hilarious. I mean, who are you kidding? You know what I mean? It's like, you got any more calories? That sauce? The one that you didn't want to put on in the first place? You need more now? It's hilarious. Just give it, just take it, you know? Eat it, for heaven's sake.
Have you ever seen the people that bring their own ranch dressing to restaurants?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's the worst.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I had a place here for years, Coolfish in Syosset. Guy comes in, right? Sitting at the table in the bar area, and the guy gets up and leaves. Right? So he's gone for like 40 minutes. So we're thinking maybe they had a fight. She's waiting for a cab or whatever. He comes back in. I swear this is true. He's got an entire Italian takeout dinner in a bag. He takes it out and he's serving it. You want any more of your Parmesan? No. Okay. Can I get a beer over here? You know, kind of thing. It's like, so the waiter comes over. He says, what are you got to throw him out. I said, are you kidding me? You would deny me this entertainment? I got to see how this ends, you know? It was hilarious. I'll take a check. That'll be $9. Thanks. You know, he's there for 2.5 hours eating Italian food in a sushi, in a fish restaurant. Oh, it's hilarious. Welcome to Long Island, boys.
Well, we haven't had that happen yet.
But I think there's some things that, you know, that you should absolutely not do if you're eating sushi. Like I said, you know, dousing everything. You know, a little dab of, you know, everybody, I'm sure you put a little dab of wasabi on the bottom or whatever, you know.
So it's on there. Traditional.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have fresh wasabi, I love, you know, you put a little on the fish. And if you want to dip just a toe in the water with the soy, fine. But this whole in there, it is
a
mess.
Yeah, we don't offer it. Everything's done. When you come here and order omakase, I brush it with soy sauce.
Yeah.
Put the wasabi in it. Put the right amount of rice. Put everything in it. I'm like, if somebody asks, can I have extra soy sauce? I'm like, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, then, you know, the eye rolls, you know, come about.
Well, it's almost like the ketchup on a steak. You know, people always say, oh, you must get crazy. But I don't care. Once you buy it, it's yours. Do whatever you want to care less, you know. But, you know, you're sitting there and I make a judgment about your taste, you know.
But you get this, right? You get this delicate piece of fish, right? That is so expensive and so fresh. And you have this rice that's painstakingly made.
Mm-hmm.
And the little shiso leaf on top of it, that's just this burst of citrus, right?
Yeah.
And you douse it in, look, soy sauce is not delicate. It's not. It's delicate if you drop it, if you brush it, right? If you douse something in soy sauce, that's a salt bomb. That's
a spoonful of salt. Yeah, totally.
It just people love it. People, I mean, it's like sweet and sour sauce with your chicken McNuggets. Put the nigiri in it, and it's very frustrating from one point of view. But you have to understand, right? Art is. You make it and it's for the world. Once it's done,
it's gone.
Not yours
anymore. Yeah, for sure. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, do what you want. Once you buy it, I don't care. But I do make a judgment about
it. It tastes so good. Why would you? And the oils in the fish, right? The idea of eating raw fish as opposed to cooked fish, right? You're tasting these oils that are delicate, and it's a textural thing too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is eating sushi, whether it's fetishized or not, is a very sensual experience, right? And that was something that always got me, and it was almost like there was this air of, well, no, I'm chopstick whisking my wasabi into it. Yeah. So it's elevated. It's not, I'm not just dousing it in sauce.
But yeah, it's funny. I mean, eating it's an art form just as much as right? preparing it
it's
is.
Sensual.
And that's what people don't realize, that, you know, sushi was, you know, it just didn't grab a piece of fish, hack it off here, you know, have feed the family.
I know, but most
you know?
People just like take their piece of sushi and gobble it down, and they don't do what you just were describing, experiencing the
nuances,
oils and
yeah.
the texture and the flavor of the rice even. I didn't even realize that.
And I'll tell you, look, I'm super guilty of, I'll open a bottle of white Burgundy and I'll swirl it, I'll taste it, and I'll say, this is great, and I'm chugging it then because it's so good, right? I'm such a lover of delicious food, beverage, that I can't really help myself at that point. But you could still do that. You could still, you know, eat heartily and respect the process, respect what makes it taste so good, respect what makes it so complex.
Yeah, when you eat sushi, you got to be thinking about A, where it came from, B, who prepared it, how'd the rice get. I mean, Lee's got all this experience. He's put all this time in, you know, and in soy sauce? Come on, man, you know? I mean, just could you not?
Just order a spicy tuna roll.
Yeah, exactly. I love the ones that give it the Ira roll. You know, they got like cream cheese in it, you know, smoked salmon. It's like a bagel with rice. What are you doing? You know? It's like, come on, dude,
yeah,
you know?
The Philly roll, which is
the
salmon
cheese.
The cream cheese.
Yeah, then I got the mango puree over everything with a ton of eel sauce. It's like, stop.
Of course,
will
it's
you
delicious,
stop.
Right? You're eating flavored mayonnaise. Yeah. It's the best thing in the world.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So far you've been teasing us about, you know, your background and how you know all about what you're doing. What are the different foods and roles that you do have on the menu? And at the same time, a little birdie told me there's something about ambiance and decor at Rosu.
Well, you know, Kevin can speak to the decor more than I can. I just
decor
love the way
kitchen.
It looks.
The kitchen decor is always
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, the kitchen, you know, I talked to him about the kitchen. I said the way I wanted it. our specialty rolls are unique. We don't really have, you know, Philadelphia rolls or anything like that. I kind of...
Thank you.
I cater them to, you know, like people to come here and have an experience. You know, we don't want to have what everybody else has. We want to be our own place. We want to be different. We want to be good, you know, we just
yeah,
want to
yeah,
be good.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
We have 5 specialty rolls. They're all, you know, creations of mine. Everybody loves them so far. You know, I haven't really heard any complaints.
It's early yet.
It's early, but you know, we'll see down the road.
Will they be a combination of fish, or you usually do your rolls one fish with whatever accoutrements you prepare?
Yeah, I do
it
like one fish with accoutrements. Like we have one that it's called a pikikata sake, which translates to spicy salmon roll.
Mm-hmm.
that one's you know, salmon belly. You know, we do salmon loin that strips inside of it, cucumber, avocado, tempura flakes, and spicy mayo. You know, you have to have the spicy
mayo. Yeah, of course.
And then we torch it. We torch the salmon belly. You know, it releases so much the oils. It gets soaked by the rice. And, you know, I think that's delicious. You know, everybody loves it.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the spicy mayo. That's another thing that sometimes people abuse. You know, if they got the thing of soy sauce on one dish and then they got the bowl of spicy mayo. Is that something that's, you know, just delicately done, or it's a real presence in the roll?
You know, the way I see it is like this, you know, with rolls, it's an introduction. You get introduced to, like, eating fish. We actually have a few guests, you know, that there are regulars that come here so far. We've been open, 2 months? They've been here 6 times. And they've experienced the whole menu.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know, they came here, they order all the things from the kitchen, you know, the chicken wings that we have, which are amazing, the karage, edamame, all things, you know, like you find at every Japanese restaurant.
Sure, yeah.
They loved it. Now, like two weeks ago, they were like, oh, we want to try some sushi. We see you do it all the time. Can we try it? I was like, sure. Like, I just didn't think you like it. It's like, well, don't, but I want to try it. Great. She's like, oh my God, that's what I've been missing? Like, this is what salmon tastes like raw? I'm like, yeah. Like, she's like, oh my God, I love this.
Yeah, it's like, I'll have Pinot Grigio. Why? You know?
Like, she loved it. And then she started ordering, like, you know, the rolls. You know, she's not ordering the fancy special to roll with the spicy mayo. She's actually, like, both of them, her and her husband, are just enjoying the fish.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, simple.
The simplicity of it.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, wow, like, I never thought I would like raw fish. And, like, you know, I was like, yeah. You know, when you make it right, when the fish is fresh and you were just, you know, like, what is it, taking my word for it in a way and just experience a bite, you're like, oh, wow, this is really good. You know, it's and then, but at the same time, like, rolls are introduction to, like, people to get into, like, you know, the sushi, the omakase section. So we always make the rolls in restaurants, you know. That's why they have Philadelphia rolls, how they are. That's why they have all these other fish. The introduction to eventually get to, like, your nigiri, your sashimi, where, you know, once you get to sashimi, it's just raw fish and soy sauce.
Yeah, it's kindergarten sushi.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like...
And a lot of places, the fish isn't that good. That's why they mask it with the cream cheese, and they mask it with the mayo. And you know, it doesn't have to be bad fish for it just to not be that great, not be spectacular. Part of this is enjoying spectacular fish that is better raw than it is cooked.
Yeah,
it's better with a little rice as opposed to a bunch of koopy mayo and
I gotta say, I'm getting a little annoyed here that you didn't bring any samples with you.
Well, we asked. By the way, we asked.
But let me just quickly ask.
We want you to come and see the decor.
We're gonna have to do that.
Tom's gonna guest chef one night.
We could turn it into
an event. You guys can invite your following. And
well, listen, we've shucked oysters here. We've done some crazy things. We could have rolled sushi. But is the restaurant open for lunch?
We are not open for lunch right now. We just offer brunch. On the weekends.
That's smart. That lunch is, you know, it's not, unless you listen, I had a place in an industrial area over here. I mean, we used to do 200 lunches a day, you know, but it's not anymore. Nobody's in the offices anymore, you know, so it's completely, you know, completely off the hook.
And let me just make a break. The name of the restaurant is Rozu. It's in Rockville Center. What's the address? Where in town is it? So people.
It's on 21 South Park Avenue. We do have a happy hour where we have a deal on rolls. They're if I'm not mistaken, it's not specialty rolls. It's sort of
no, it's everything.
Everything. There you go.
All rolls and all beer in house that we have, it's 50% off.
And you're south of Merrick Road and between Merrick Road and Sunrise Highway?
I don't know where Merrick Road is, but we'll clean this up.
It in maps. You got it. You know.
We'll clean this up.
You know what? You know what kills me about happy hour? It's the worst name in the world for something like that because nobody's ever happy. The people aren't happy because it ends, right? The owner's not happy because you're giving away stuff that you pledged your whole life not to do. You know what I mean? Hey, God, it's the biggest misnomer I've ever seen.
Depressed hour.
Yeah, but you know what's exciting to me about this restaurant, and you know, I intended to go last night, and I got way late, but I've always said that on Long Island, and it's probably the same in Jersey suburbs, whatever. Every Italian restaurant has the same menu. Every Japanese restaurant has the same menu. Every strip center has one of those, one of these, one of them. You know, and I always said like the people that really step out and do something different are the people that really ultimately become very successful. You know, Mario Batali, his sexual ravings notwithstanding, I mean, did that for Italian food in the city. He was cooking like it was Italy, not like Little Italy. You know, and it's the same thing here. I mean, you're doing food. You know, like, I don't know if you've ever been to Oya in Boston, but it's my favorite sushi place on the planet. I mean, and it's run by an American guy, you know, which is unusual, you know, at that high a level, you know. But he actually stepped out. He's not doing the same thing that everybody's doing. You guys are doing the same. I mean, I understand you have a hand roll cart or something going on.
Yeah, you know, we, for the nigiri part, you know, like the rice with the fish, that section of it, we're trying to keep it traditional.
Right.
That's it. You know, we have a brunch menu that, you know, we have some things that are Japanese.
Right.
Like, you know, our souffle pancakes. They're amazing. They're extra fluffy. They're tall. They're nice. They're very airy. Like, when you bite into it, you're like, somebody describes like biting into a cloud.
Nice.
It's so delicious, you know.
It's like walking on Crocs.
Yeah. I actually don't have Crocs. I don't know.
Oh, but get them. It's like walking on a calzone. You'd be surprised. It's incredible.
Nice. I gotta get them now. But, you know, like it's, you know, that's the only thing that we're actually keeping traditional. The whole rest of the menu from brunch and, you know, the things from the kitchen, it's really catered to everybody.
We
have a very extensive menu to just get people in. Not everybody eats sushi, and we understand that. So that's why we're trying to make it a little bit different. You know, we want to make sure that we have what other restaurants don't have.
Right.
You know, we want to, like you said, we want to pioneer from what everybody restaurant has.
Sure.
If everybody restaurant has, like, oh, it's another sushi restaurant.
Rocky yeah, said why bother?
It's over in the same Philadelphia road. That
exactly. Why go there if I can, you know? Yeah.
Exactly. So, and then with sushi, like, we find, you know, that, I mean, at least in my experience, I don't trust sushi restaurants, you know, just off the bat. I'm like, I got to see the reviews. Like, sushi has to be good.
Yeah, especially when I got that half price on Monday.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
What's
yeah.
with that?
But that's, oh, that's okay. So that's the double-edged sword with it. Sometimes you tell people your sushi's half off, and they think they're going to go get sick.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't under, you know, they, I think one of the things that's very important, right, with all of this is hospitality, right? And we built the place to be hospitable. We are hospitable people. Lee, not to harp on the omakase, because his menu is fantastic. The mm-hmm. the other food is delicious, and it's very inviting and easy. It's easy to go in there and order apps and entrees. But the omakase, you sit at a bar. He encourages you to eat it traditionally with your fingers. He explains to you where the fish comes from. He tells you about the process with the rice, the aging of the vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
His behind him is this, you know, for those of you who don't work in restaurants, a chef's knife kit is everything to him, right? And or her, and they collect them over years, and they hone them. They sharpen them with stones, and he has all his knives up, and he's more than willing to talk about any of them to anyone. And why you use one that looks like Hattori Hanzu from Kill Bill blade to cut fish, as opposed to a small paring knife.
And most people don't know some of them are thousands of dollars.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
you
yeah.
know, $1,500, $2,000 for a knife.
I think in my most expensive one, I was like $2,800.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It took me about 18 months to get it. It was custom made from Japan.
The 18 months to save up for it.
Yeah. Well, I was in a payment plan, you know?
Yeah. The mortgage.
Exactly.
What was the rate?
It's, you know, like I was saying, like, sometimes, you know, when you go to sushi restaurant, you don't see all that goes behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, we try to make it show, you know. Mm-hmm.
With the cart. And with mm-hmm. the cart,
yeah,
right?
With the cart,
that's
too.
That's one of the things we do. And it's hand rolls, I think, are one of the most hand rolls, tamaki are one of, they're the hottest thing right now when you go to a sushi place, right? Mm-hmm. It's the new spicy tuna roll, the
oh,
new
no. yeah.
tempura roll, and we do a bespoke experience with it on a little cart that, say, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, you would have got a Caesar salad out of that.
Sure, yeah,
in
yeah,
Alaska.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a person rolling these hand rolls, which are meant to eat within seconds of being made, and people get to choose everything they want in it.
Yeah, we pretty much walk up to them, like, you know, you want tuna? Great. Well, what do you want with that? You want avocado, jalapeno, cucumbers, spicy mayo? You know, you got to throw that in there.
Sure, of course.
And like I said, our whole experience was like, we wanted hand rolls, but I hate the idea of hand rolls sitting down, you know, like getting soggy,
and then getting to the
table,
sure.
You know, and it's like, it gets in your teeth. It's not enjoyable. At least I don't.
You
got
to buy those silly wooden things that have the half circle with the holes
even
in
then,
it.
Even then, you know, like, it's like the warmth of the rice, like, gets the seaweed. Yeah,
steams sure.
It gets
yeah,
soggy.
Yeah, of course,
so,
yeah.
You know, we really want to bring, you know, a great product to the table. So we came up with this idea. Let's do a hand roll cart.
Yeah, yeah.
And an experience, right?
Yeah, it's
so
an experience.
You say, what's different from going here as any other sushi restaurant, any other Japanese restaurant? And I think, you know, we pride ourselves on decor, making an inviting sort of visual to people, and also giving them an experience, giving them education, combining those things, right? And we're not even talking about the sakes and the cocktails. You know, my pedigree is in spirits and in wine and in beer, and I knew nothing about sake. Mm-hmm. And opening this restaurant, it was like I'm not going to call it a graduate degree, but it was a certificate in sake,
of course,
and shochu to a degree, and figuring out how to use these spirits, pairing them with food raw cooked, and also cocktailing with them, and also, you know, I think it's a celebration, right? Drinking sake, it's while it's not the equivalent, it's very close to doing a shot in America, right? You go to a bar, you kanpai, cheers, salud. It's a way to celebrate or commemorate or mourn, right? And that's why we go out as opposed to ordering delivery or cooking at home.
What type of selection of sake do you have? I mean, I used to order the warm sake.
Oh, and please, don't even say that.
Does the reprimands
me? We don't do warm sake.
No. So now I know to drink cold sake.
You're very close to being fired. No, it's true. It's like, you know, I have an extensive background in wine also. You know, I've been a wino for a long time, and
Means you're a fun person.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. So I got introduced to sake.
I'm fun with sake and spirits.
What's amazing with sake is, you know, with wine you have all these different grapes, red, white, you know, all kinds of varietals. You know, you go to Italy, it'll blow your mind, right? Mm-hmm. Sake is rice. I mean, and I've tasted mango and mushroom, and I mean, there's actually more going on sometimes in a sake than the wine. You know, wine has the usual, you know, tobaccos and saddle, and you know, I've leather, even heard tensile and number two pencil and all the silly things that people go.
Boy, they can't think of worse tasting things. Why
would you chew on that? I don't get it. Like, you know? And why not a number? How come it's not a number four? You know? I had a friend of mine who's kind of a adjective cruncher. He says to me one day, he goes, "Did you get the? Was that Anjou pear or Bosch pear in the back of that Sauvignon?" I said, "You got some pear even asking me that. I mean, you wouldn't know the difference between the two of them. You know, you kidding me? You know, what the hell's the matter with you? Shut up and drink it, for God's sake." You know?
Tastes good.
But, you know, with sake, there really are. There's a myriad of flavors in there that, you know, how do you get that out of rice? I mean, I get the polishing thing, but geez, you know? I mean,
so structured, too. Like, when they break down the science of it and the I mean, everything is 15%. Everything is, you know, to a T. It's like the creativity is straitjacketed.
Well, that's the Asian brain,
yeah,
you know.
But
yeah,
the flavors are all so different.
Yeah, and it's crazy. It's
so I'm walking over with a picture of a label from a sake that I had recently. You have to tell me if it's had a minute.
What was the temperature of the sake, first of all?
First of all, it was chilled.
Okay,
so
thank you.
You should be proud of me. But
I'm very
what's
proud
very interesting is the guests that I was with said, you know, make sure you order cold sake because we listen to Playing with Fire, and Tom tells us how to do it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good sake. It's a Junmai, so it's not like the highest grade of sake. But it's not. Junmai does just means the rice polishing ratio of. You know, I've had some Junmai sakes. I don't know, my favorite sake is.
We both prefer Junmai sake.
Yeah,
it's funny you show me this because immediately I look and it's like 300 milliliter. It's all served like that. 15 to 16% by volume. I guarantee you it's 15 on the dot. that some importer made them, you know, write that.
Uh-huh.
I actually have not tried. This is Bunraku.
I haven't tried it.
I feel like I've had every sake available in this market, and I haven't tried that.
That's probably the Bud Light, you know.
The Bud Light's the best sake,
you know?
Though.
I asked the question if you're open for lunch, you mentioned brunch, and sushi isn't something that I normally think of as a brunch destination. So fill us in on what that is and what the menu is for that, and then I really do want to get into this decor thing.
Yeah, well, you know. For brunch, like it's Japanese people, they have a great breakfast selection. You know, like if you know, like the way we do the brunch is, you know, soy sauce, dashi, eggs, you know, bacon.
Yeah.
We try to Americanize our brunch so it can be, you know, approachable. But we still try to put that you know, Japanese influence and those ingredients into everything that we're making. Like I mentioned earlier, that's our souffle pancakes. We whip the eggs, we make them fluffy, we make them nice. We do a hojicha butter with the hojicha, which is a Japanese herbal tea. Mm-hmm. We mix it with a little bit of syrup. It's like nice. It's different. It's extremely creamy. It's so good.
Yeah.
There's a burger on the menu.
Yeah, we also have a burger, which I was gonna get to that. Like we have a Wagyu burger. That one we use a brioche bun. You know, trying to keep it like a burger, like an actual burger. I love burgers. Like burgers is like, I know I do sushi, but it's like, there's nothing like having a nice burger.
Yeah, most winemakers drink beer.
I like the juice to come out of it. You know, like I like to get my shirt messy.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
It was good. If my shirt is messy, it's a good burger. I'm not upset about it. I'll buy a new shirt.
There you go.
But yeah, we have this Wagyu burger on the menu. Comes with Swiss cheese, you know, pickled radish, brioche bun, and Calabrian aioli. It's very good. Everybody loves it. We have a Japanese French toast on the menu as well, which pretty much a French toast. You know, we use milk bread to it, which gives it a little bit high. We soak it for 48 hours in this custard mix.
Right.
So, like, when you cut into it, it looks like a custard.
It doesn't really look like bread.
Like a traditional, like, French toast. It's actually soaked in. So it's so good. Let's see what else. And, you know, we also have fish waffles, taiyaki, stuffed with Nutella.
Oh, cool.
You know, we wanted to be something like, you know, nice and kind of cheesy. So, like,
went
to look online for a waffle maker that was shipped in the fish.
Right, to keep
like the Asian theme to it. So it's kind of fun, you know, like, you look at it, you get three on the plate with the little maple syrup and powdered sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kids love it.
It's sure.
It's like, oh, you put Nutella on anything, kids love it.
Not only kids.
we still offer the full sushi
for brunch.
People actually love that.
I would prefer that. I don't eat eggs. So no, it's, you know, I'd rather have fish. You know,
I do a 21 course omakase for brunch.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm with you. I can do that for 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and then we actually
rather have that than unborn chickens. You know what I mean?
One of the first weekends that we opened for brunch, I think it was the second day on Sunday. We got a guest that sat at the bar. It was like, can we do omakase? I was like, yeah. And they were like, yeah, we don't want to do brunch. We love the omakase. I was like, great. And then we have a few other tables come in. Like, nah, yeah, we don't want to do the omakase. We come for dinner for that.
Yeah.
We want the waffles. We want the bacon, stuff. Funny thing, when we were going into the idea of doing brunch, you know, I was tasked with, like, you know, making it approachable for everybody else that likes brunch. You know,
sure.
Rockford Center is a big brunch town. So we really cater to, like, everybody. So I looked into, like, you know, what our brunch menu is and how I can incorporate, like, Asian ingredients and, techniques into it.
Uh-huh.
That's what we did.
Cool.
You know, we have all these other items. It's just, like, you know, traditional brunch items in Rockville Center or in America, and then just make them Japanese.
So, to clarify, though, the location, apparently the restaurant is on the south side of town on South Park Avenue, just below Merrick Road.
Yes. That's where we're located.
All right. Well, listen, let's take a little break. We got to pay some bills. Otherwise, I won't be able to afford to go there. And we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about the decor and how all that happened.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM. Long Island's old food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shordell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, and we're here today with Kevin Hushangi and Lee Hernandez, the owner and chef, respectively, of Rosu restaurant and just opened in Rockville Center about, what, 2 months ago, I guess?
Yeah, 2 months ago.
So you have this decor, and the decor interests me for one reason. We talked about this a little bit before we got on air. It's kind of like a street art kind of thing, and I'm a bit of a collector, and so that appeals to me. I have a bunch of Warhol, and I have some Basquiat and things like that, you know, so... Talk to me about how that happened.
Yeah, well, first,
I always wanted to do that. I didn't have the courage.
First of all, if you have those things, you could easily afford the restaurant. I think, you know, the every chef probably in their hearts is a method actor and wants a black box restaurant where they could serve their food on their $10,000 plates, sure, with their flatware and everything. And I think in this day and age, you really have to give an experience that, and if you could pull it off in that setting, that's great. But we really pride ourselves kind of on taking chances and quirky design. And the thought behind this place was, A, what are we going to name it? And we came up with the name Rosu, which is rose in Japanese.
Right.
And for some reason, I think we were looking at restaurants a couple years ago, and there was one restaurant with an organic tree inside of it. And we thought it was a really cool kind of effect. Yeah, you lose some seating, but what you gain in sort of ambiance,
yeah, vibe,
made up for,
sure,
it, right?
Yeah.
So we built a tree inside the restaurant and did...
Two trees,
correct. and did lots of... Kind of pop art, so mm-hmm. to say, right? And then we would do these little enclaves of street art, of graffiti, of nods to music venues in New York City, giving it kind of an edgy vibe, just because all of us have a background in New York City, and we wanted to have that. And we have a private room attached to it, which also is going to serve as a different omakase experience, a cocktail experience. And that room is much more street art with a mix of pop art, mm-hmm. and sort of 3Ds, right? There's a 3D subway facade, various pieces of small art. There's also cocktail seating with lounge seating in there. And the vibe is sort of to book private parties there, to book large groups wanting a bespoke experience, mm-hmm. right? Craft cocktails, sake, omakase. And, you know, this idea of kind of a tree gives life to things, right?
Sure.
It takes all of the bad, right? And it turns it into good. It takes the carbon dioxide, makes it oxygen. And,
sure.
And it's a metaphor in our place. It's not a real tree, but we wanted these bright pinks and these fuchsias and that sort of feeling, to have people welcome, to have people want to be entertained, want to be educated. And even the bar, it's you go to so many sushi bars, and I'm not sure if it's a Bain Marie or whatever the setup is, but it's a little refrigerated table, and there's a slab of wood in front, and you get served the omakase on that. And we, mm-hmm. we built these butcher block, this beautiful butcher block bar that's thick and long and just it's part of the restaurant. It's a design factor. It's a piece of art. And to be able to eat the meal off of that when you're sitting there, it creates it's the je ne sais quoi, right? This idea of, I don't know why I'm happy now, but I am. I have space. I have this piece of art in front of me that I'm eating more art off of, and it's done in a totally non-pretentious way.
Yeah, it touches a part of the brain that, you know, fires up that whole thought process as far as, you know, why am I happy? I don't know, but it looks good around here, you know, kind of thing. And, I, you know, being a restaurant guy and for all these years, you know, I'm always excited when somebody puts thought into the, and not just the you know, the boilerplate stuff. There was a designer who was working on Long Island for a long time in the 80s and 90s. And I think he owned stock in the lamp company because he had the same lamps in every restaurant he did. And I walk in, oh, that's a, you know, I won't even say his name, but that's a, his, you know, kind of thing. And it's, again, like we were talking about before, when somebody steps out of the norm, to me, that's exciting. I mean, that's what, you know, I think takes a modicum of courage. And I'll tell you a story. I remember reading an article before when Wolfgang Puck opened up Spago. All you heard about was Spago, Spago, Spago. You know, I said, I got to go out there and check this place out, and I want to hate it. I can't wait to hate this place, you know. I went to Spago, I had dinner, and if he said, shave your head, put these white clothes on, and sell flowers in the front, I'd have done it, right? It was just phenomenal, right? And then I started reading more about Wolfgang Puck, and he was involved with this guy, Patrick Terrell, at Mamazon Restaurant in L.A. for a long time. And Mamazon had an unlisted phone number. For a restaurant, that's a ballsy move, right? So, but the thing was that every woman in Los Angeles was scratching each other's eyes out to get the number. It's like the Studio 54 thing. You can come in, you can come in, you can't. You know, the can't guy comes back the next day with a new uniform on, you know, trying to get in, right? Everybody wants what they can't have. I never had the courage to unlist the number because I always figured they go, yeah, who needs him? You know, that's stupid. But it's stepping out of the norm. I mean, that's what you guys are doing over there. That's what makes it so, I can't wait to go there. I wish I would have went last night, but circumstances prevented it.
It's easy to take chances when you have nothing to lose, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, being a seasoned restaurant guy, there's always something to lose, you know?
You could have, but my reference is more, we've lost so much, it doesn't really, at this point.
I know. I've been there, done that. I've had, like, about 25 of these things, you know, and I've had two go down on me, you know. One was my fault and one wasn't, you know. And the one that was my fault was actually cool because it kind of, you know, it gave me some insight about, you know, what not to do, you know, and keep your ego in check kind of thing, play by the rules. And the other one was just the, you know, circumstance of the times. I opened up a place in the Hamptons in the year that the market crashed, you know, so that was a complete disaster.
Which,
you know?
Which market, 2008?
No, the early one. Okay. Yeah, back in the 89 or 87, whatever it was. Anyway, enough of that. But, yeah, it's fun to watch some young guys come up now and do some exciting things. And I think that for Long Island, it's what it needs. I mean, everybody here plays safe. You know, everybody's got the Caesar salad with the grilled chicken thing because they've been beaten into submission. And I've never really understood, because I've always gone the other way. You know, sometimes the great success, sometimes the moderate, sometimes not so much, whatever, you know. But at least you take that shot and see, because it's a chicken and the egg thing. Do people not do that because the people won't come, or people don't go because it isn't available, you know? So I don't know what it is, but I think that, you know, I have an Italian restaurant out east, and, you know, I do the thing like Italy, not like, you know, there's no Parmesans and Rollatinis and silly stuff like that, you know? So to see what you guys are doing, I'm really excited to do it. I'm totally excited to taste your food, Lee. I can't wait, you know?
Yeah, I can't wait to have you.
Yeah, it should be pretty soon. I can see when I get some time off, usually during the week. You open 7 days, 6 days?
Six days.
Right, 6 days? Monday closed?
Yeah, Monday's closed right now.
Okay.
The restaurant day of rest.
Yeah. Unless you're out east, we do Tuesdays out there. Because
Monday's,
you know,
industry night.
It's a holiday, too. You know, you got to think about the holidays, the three-day weekends out there, you know. But, yeah, well, welcome to Long Island, guys. This is so cool.
Thank you.
So you're open 6 days a week, and give me the hours.
We open at 4 p.m. Till 10 p.m. Tuesdays through Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
Fridays is 4 to midnight. Saturdays is 11 a.m. to midnight. Sundays we do 11 a.m. to 9 p.m.
You guys are ambitious, man, a midnight thing. Good luck.
You know, we want to be a late night spot. So,
Definitely.
It's going to work itself in there.
Well, hopefully you get people, restaurant industry people. I mean, you know, people get off at 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Then, you know,
there's somewhere to go to eat. I mean, you used to have to go to the city. I know everybody who used to work for me in Sayasa used to hightail at the Wo Hop, or, you know, they went to the city and, you know, they get Chinese.
Wo Hop, upstairs or downstairs?
They were upstairs.
The downstairs one is the one to go to.
Yeah. Of course.
You know, I've never been there.
Really?
No, I've never been there.
I'd love for you to be my guest one night. A night you want to go, and listen, it's all about vibes.
He goes
vibes.
There a lot, apparently.
Yeah, does he? Yeah.
It's all about vibes. No knock against it, but it is Chinese, Szechuan, you know, like you're going to find anywhere. But it tastes better at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning.
But you're down in that part of town. Do you do Katz's or you do Wohop?
So Katz, Katz closes way early. Katz is in a late night.
Well, if you want to get yelled at, you go to Katz's. Yeah. If you don't feel like getting yelled at, you go to
Never lose your green slip at Katz's because you can't get out.
No, you can't.
Are you kidding me?
I'll tell you, my favorite thing about Katz's is, you know, you're waiting in line to get it. And I'm like a kid at like Christmas or a kid in the ice cream shop. I'm staring at these guys cutting the pastrami, right? And like they'll literally cut it up. They'll take a piece and they'll hold it out for you.
Yes.
That's my favorite. That is my favorite part of going there.
The pastrami tasting.
I feel seen. I feel important.
That was like going to the butcher growing up.
That's the guy would be slicing the counter.
The guy would be slicing the bologna or whatever, you know, and give you a slice.
Yeah. This is the best bologna in the world.
Oh, God. It's so bad. This is a great part about New York. There's so much going on there. You know, it's nuts, you know. I lived in the city for a while, and, you know, I love the fact that there was, you know, 24 hours a day. Anything you want is available. It's
not just
crazy.
Anything you want. You could go get Kenyan food at 3:30 in the morning.
You pick
what you want, and you could find
What about Sunday morning, Russ and Daughters?
Russ and Daughters is fantastic. It's
when you can get in.
Problem going Sunday morning is you're going Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely.
And now the kitschy thing is, you know, I think there's like 3 Russ and Daughters. They're in these little food courts that they've opened up. And
we had a reservation. Like, it's an hour and a half wait. I was like, I have a reservation. It's like, it's an hour and a half wait.
I was, you know, 10 years ago or 7 years ago, I was really into finding like the new Katz, the new Russ and Daughters, the new they had a place called Harry and Ida's that these guys like they cured everything themselves, they made it themselves, but it was a unique way that they made it, and they didn't need to follow any of the health codes because they weren't a restaurant. They were like a
that's comforting.
Yeah, no, but they had all the other codes to follow. They were like a supermarket or whatever, but it was set up as a restaurant, and it was just phenomenal to try all of these different things. And you forget, you go to a culinary school, you learn how to cure things lots of different ways. Mm-hmm. You learn, you know, but it's everything follows a trend. So when you try something a little different, it's really cool. And it's a classic. It's nothing special. No, you know, it's not a new riff. It's the same old riff.
No, it's soul food though. I mean, I didn't grow up in a Jewish household, but about once a month I get that Day of the Dead thing going on when my hands are in front of me and I wander into Ben's, you know, because I have to have my kasha varnitschkis, a pastrami sandwich, just some mushroom barley soup, and a diet black cherry. That's my whole thing once a month. Then I go home to the couch and I moan for about 2 hours, you know, until it passes.
I just want to know what happened to diet celery.
Well,
you could still get the regular celery. Yes, it's one of my favorites. And I, too, did not grow up in a Jewish household, but I might as well have. The amount of the latkes, the kashka varnish, the everything, the stuffed cabbage, all of these things that are grandma dishes, right? We call them, you know, oh, my grandma makes the best.
Yeah,
of course. Grandma makes the best. For me, I used to love challah bread, right? Because it was something you had on Friday. You'd go to your friend's house who was Jewish and they you know they're not observing the Sabbath, but they're eating a ton of challah bread, and you're eating bagels in the morning when you wake up. And
so during the regular year, it's the twisted challah, mm-hmm. and then for the Jewish holidays, you have the round one.
See, the braided one is the best.
Of course.
All right, so listen, we're getting out of time here. Why don't you give us the lowdown? Where are you? How do we get in touch? You got a website? You got a phone number?
We have an unlisted phone number.
Perfect. I'll strangle you to get it.
We have a website. We have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. You know, Rosu RVC is our Instagram page. Uh-huh. I think it's the same one for Facebook. You know, we're always constantly updating it. You know, our menu's in there. We're always posting photos of drinks, food, specials, you know, whatever it's happening.
So the website is rozurvc.com.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could also catch us on delivery, you know, Grubhub, Uber Eats.
Cool.
And what's the other one?
Seamless.
Not Seamless. DoorDash.
Got a phone number?
Yeah, we have a phone number.
It's 516.
Let me see. What's our phone number? Yeah, it's 516-208-3110.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in, you guys. I'm so excited for you. I hope this is a smashing success. I'll do my part. I'll be down there with my credit card and pretty good with it.
Let me know when you're going, because there's nothing better than hanging out with
Not
Tom.
After you said the Wampsocket thing. You're right. You're right. No,
I told you I've been guided.
All right.
No, we have some great sake selection.
I'm going to bring him down here and educate him on sake at my own expense at your place. So
now you're talking.
We're going to close the show with Tom's three keys to life. Like always, his life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.